Again, welcome to those of you that have just joined us. We are so glad that you are here as we together pay attention to some words from an Old Testament prophet known as Isaiah, a man who spoke about anticipated real things that would be expressed in Jesus. Anticipated realities of Jesus, and these were anticipated with great longing. And when Jesus was on earth and began to display these realities, it filled people with thoughts of this is amazing, and this is marvelous, and this is wonderful. As we journey together over these weeks, I'd like to invite people to do what some of you did in the Galatians series, and that is express some of your reflections that the Spirit of God brings to your mind as a result of your interaction with the words of the prophet Isaiah. In our series on Galatians, I invited people to do that at the end of the series. But the idea is that we might, in a given week, just share some of our responses to what God is teaching us. And one way to do that is to go to our church's email address, icbishkek@gmail.com. You can also go to our website where you can access that Gmail account. And just write something that God taught you from Isaiah, or a reflection you have, or a response that you have. Not as much, I like this or I didn't like this, as much as what is the Spirit of God teaching you? And then what we'll do is we'll compile those and periodically on the website under the Isaiah series, we'll put those responses, only putting your first initial and last initial, or if you prefer that it would be anonymous, simply say anonymous. But I think we'll be fed by that. In the evening community called Salutation, we have lots of opportunity to share these reflections together, respond with one another in prayer, but we don't have enough opportunity to do that in the morning. And I think we very much need to do that as we journey through Isaiah over these 7 weeks. Also, as we get started with the focus this morning, or as we continue with the focus this morning, I want to make some comments that are a bridge from what I said last week, and don't worry if you weren't here last week, and a bridge to what I will be saying this week. And the bridge is in the form of verses that transition us from the verses of last week and the prophecy of Isaiah for this week. Last week, if you were with us or if you were not, we looked at the prophecy from Isaiah 7, verse 14, where in the midst of a dark time, in the midst of the evil reign of Ahaz, who was supposed to be a king following God, God says to Ahaz, ask for a sign. In other words, come to me, speak to me, ask for my help. And Ahaz refused, but God gave this sign anyway, and the sign is worded this way: therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel. And there, while there were some immediate fulfillments of that prophecy in Isaiah's time, we read in Matthew 1 when the angel speaks to Joseph that it's okay for him to take the Virgin Mary as his wife, and she will give birth to a son whom the Holy Spirit of God conceived. We read that this prophecy in Isaiah was fulfilled in the coming of Jesus. The bridge, though, that I want to speak to you relates to a danger that I created last week. But it's a danger that you can create in your own mind as you think about Jesus as Emmanuel, God with us, or as we now think about Jesus' present rule as a light shining in the darkness. And the danger of disconnect is that as one looks at the evil in the world, or the evil around you, or even the evil in you, that can be so thick. The darkness can be so thick that then when we speak of things like Jesus, the Holy One of God with us, Jesus, God with us, we come to Him as a refuge. We come to Him for comfort. We come to Him for salvation, but we don't think of Him influencing that evil. We don't think of Him influencing that darkness, but that He's separate from the real problems in the world, the real problems in your life, the real darkness in your mind and in your heart. So we create a disconnect. Churches can do that. You as an individual can come to a gathering such as this and, oh, I'm refreshed by Jesus. And then I go out into this evil world on my own and I hope I just make it till the next Sunday. Right? That's an example of disconnect. There's two responses from this bridge passage that I want to give to you that will then feed how we look at the passage before us this morning. The first is what I already alluded to and that this entire service has been saying, and that's the nature of light, including the nature of Jesus, who is the light of the world. The light shines in the darkness. The darkness might be so thick, but His light is not intended to stay separate from that darkness, but to permeate that darkness and to shine in that darkness. So as was read in the service already, we'll see at the beginning of the prophecy we're looking at in Isaiah 9, the people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. So the idea of the light of Jesus is like the light dawning in the day, and it's shining brighter and brighter and brighter. Now, Isaiah experienced this. As I alluded to last week in Isaiah 6, the light of God shone in his darkness. And one of the first things that happened is he saw the holiness of God, which happens when the light of Jesus shines in our life. We see the holiness of God. The light shining in his life then let him see the depths of his darkness, which was even deeper than he thought. Someone in this community shared with me some of the dark things in their life and the world as they looked at it. I sent him an email quoting from someone in church history that basically said, "You're even more self-deluded than what you think you are." And he wrote me back an email and said, "I guess I'm not thinking of the darkness quite deeply enough. It's even worse than I thought." But that's what happens when the light of Jesus shines into the darkness. We see the holiness of God. We see that we're even worse than what we thought. And then what happens is that light shines in us and makes us realize the purpose for which Jesus came, to cleanse us from our sin, of which Isaiah anticipated and had the foretaste when this piece of coal touched his lips. The coal did not save Isaiah as it touched his lips, but it was the anticipation of this one who would come and shine in the darkness and take away sin that saved Isaiah. But then that light shines further in a person's life as they see the holiness of God, see their sin, realize the forgiveness that is in Jesus Christ. Jesus then says, "I send you into the darkness." But here's where that disconnect can happen again in our lives. Some of you even teach this. You teach this to your children. You say this to your friends. Okay, as I go through my day, I need to think about what would Jesus do. So Jesus is this light shining in the darkness, and I now need to be that light shining in the darkness. And you have separated yourself from Jesus. You have again disconnected yourself from who he is. That's not how it works. So you go through your day and you're trying to be a little Jesus. Yeah? And you start to think, am I being a pretty good little Jesus? Yeah? But that's not the way it works. Being sent by Jesus into the darkness of the world, the manner in which we reflect the light of Jesus is by modeling in our own lives a growing love for his holiness, a growing delight in being shown our own sin, a growing awareness of the forgiveness that we have in him, a growing capacity to discern His purposes in the world and how He wants to use us in a given situation. One of the ways we bear witness to that light of Jesus in us is when with our friends and even when our enemies, we apologize for the sin that's in us. Instead of pretending to be these perfect models of Jesus, we come into these places of darkness and admit with the people around us that sometimes we experience that same hopelessness, those same fears, those same anxieties, and yet we know we don't need to because the light of Jesus is with us. So that danger of disconnect, oh, there's Jesus, and then there's the darkness of the world. Or, oh, there's Jesus, and then there's us. But in Isaiah 8, verses 16 through 18, which transition us from where we ended last week and move us into now what we will focus on this morning, Isaiah concludes the section with some words that I now want to put on the PowerPoint, which are essential for us to understand so that we see that this disconnect actually in God's mind wants to be permanently removed in our lives. He says the words, "Bind up this testimony of warning and seal up God's instruction among my disciples." So what He has said to Isaiah, to the people about Jesus, God's Holy One, the Emmanuel, "Bind this up and seal God's instructions among my disciples, those who are yet seeking the Lord. I, Isaiah says, will wait for the Lord who is hiding His face from the descendants of Jacob, hiding His face from God's people being led by Ahaz who are going off with Him into deep levels of dark sin." Then He says, "I will put my trust in Him. Here am I and the children the Lord has given me. We are signs and symbols in Israel from the Lord Almighty who dwells on Mount Zion." I don't care to get into the fact that Isaiah, with the birth of his second son, saw that he was a partial fulfillment of this prophecy of God with us. But what I want you to notice is that phrase, "I will put my trust in Him. Here am I and the children God has given me." Because the Spirit of Christ in Isaiah, anticipating the coming of Jesus, those words He spoke in Hebrews 2 are words that are assigned to Jesus, that He said them about Himself. So in Hebrews 2, if you look at that passage now, don't get lost in all these words. We'll come back to what I'm saying about the light shining in the darkness and not letting this disconnect happen. Notice what He says, the writer of Hebrews 2. Just follow the PowerPoint so I don't lose you. "In bringing many sons and daughters to glory, it was fitting that God, for whom and through whom everything exists, should make the pioneer of their salvation," He's been speaking of Jesus, "perfect through what He suffered. Both the one who makes people holy," notice that part of the light in us is we see the holiness of God, we see our sin, we experience His cleansing, and He sends us, but there's something more being said, that He forms us, He grows us in His holiness. "That the one who makes people holy and those who are made holy are of the same family." So Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers and sisters. He says, now quoting from Psalm 22, "I will declare your name to my brothers and sisters. In the assembly, I will sing your praises." And now look what He says. "And again, I will put my trust in Him," quoting from Isaiah 8. And again, He says, "Here I am and the children God has given me." Again, quoting from what Isaiah said in Isaiah 8. So here we see an even stronger connection between Jesus, the Holy One of God, with us, shining as a light in darkness in our lives. The connection is that He who shines shows Himself to be holy, shows us our sin, takes away our sin, and then doesn't simply send us into the darkness, hoping that we will flounder about full of apologies for all the ways we're a bad reflection of Jesus. No. He sends us into the darkness saying, you are mine. And I am not ashamed to call you mine. Even more, I am not ashamed to call you my brother and my sister. How many of you who are followers of Jesus, in seeking to shine as a light for him, come to these places where you know you fail? You know your light sometimes looks pretty dark, or at least pretty dim. And you start to feel shame. And you start to feel guilt that you are not a perfect reflection of Jesus. It's another disconnect. It is a disconnect that Satan wants you to believe that you go forward shining as a light for Jesus, and yet he is embarrassed of you. Oh, I'm not a very good witness of him. Those closest to me know all the ways I fail. Why is it that Jesus is not ashamed to call us brothers and sisters? Why is it that he's not ashamed to identify with us? It has nothing to do with you. It has to do with his work in you. He is not ashamed that his light is leading you to see his holiness. He is not ashamed that his light is leading you to see your sin. He is not ashamed that his light is leading you to know yet again the ways you need his forgiveness. He is not ashamed that you modeled to the world the forgiveness of sins that are in Jesus. And that you're willing to enter into the brokenness of the world as people who are still broken and in need of him. He delights to send you into the dark places, not as his perfect light, but to show the world that you too need Jesus. So you enter into these broken lives. You enter into these broken places as people in need of his light. And he is not ashamed to call you his brother and sister, not on the basis of your efforts, but on the basis of his work on the cross. Wow. Isn't that beautiful? So last Sunday I left you talking about this evil and then talking about Jesus, and I feared that we would go home. Okay. That's the level at which his light shines presently in the darkness. Which leads me now to invite you to look at Isaiah 8 and 9 with me. I won't speak long on this passage. What I want to do from this prophecy is to look with you at how Isaiah describes the present darkness of his time, which we then saw in Matthew 4 was a darkness that Jesus and Matthew extended to Jesus' time, which gives us a picture of the darkness of our present time. And after describing this deep levels of darkness, I then want to point you briefly from Isaiah 9 to ways the light of Jesus is dawning and shining in that darkness. And I hope the words that I've now spoken won't allow you to disconnect these deep levels of darkness from the ways his light is shining, shining in you and sending you into with his light. So look with me at Isaiah 8, beginning with 19 through 22. I'll read it, I won't read all of it, and then explain the present darkness that Isaiah describes. Isaiah writes, when someone tells you, again speaking from the same setting when Ahaz was king, when someone tells you to consult mediums and spiritists who whisper and mutter, should not a people inquire of their God? So, why consult the dead on behalf of the living? In other words, these are people sending others to consult with spirits and mediums, seeking to consult with the dead on behalf of the living. Why should not a people inquire of their God? Consult God's instruction and the testimony of warning. We see that phrase repeated now. If anyone does not speak according to this word, they have no light of dawn. Distressed and hungry, they will roam through the land. When they are famished, they will become enraged, and looking upward will curse their king and their God. Then they will look toward the earth, they'll look beyond their immediate setting and see only distress and darkness and fearful gloom, and they will be thrust into utter darkness. Such is this present darkness that Isaiah describes, which we see then echoed in Matthew, which we don't have to look far in our own world to see, including sometimes in us. Note a few things about this present darkness. I've already mentioned it includes a tendency to consult with other things about their future instead of seeking God. Many people do it. Mediums and spiritists, paying attention more to dreams than to God. Sometimes dreams can be of God, but consumed with dreams, consumed with horoscopes, consumed with what can I learn about my future? Rather than consulting God. And consulting God through His Word. Through His Word of instruction, including the Word which is Jesus. This darkness in failing to consult with God is such that there is no light of dawn in them. It becomes so dark in them that there is no light of God working in them. That is what had happened to Ahaz. The darkness in his life, which then flowed through him in his actions among the people, and how he faced and looked at the nations that were seeking to come against them. There was no light of dawn left in him. Such was the darkness. While we are all created in the image of God, such was the darkness that happened in his life. Notice in the first part of verse 21, this results with physical distress. This doesn't remain a spiritual problem. It led to physical distress. There was distress. There was real hunger. There was this sense of homelessness, this roaming through the land. People then, as a result of the growing despair because of the lack of the light of dawn shining among them, people started to become angry, and they started to become bitter, and they started to rise up wanting to fight, wanting to show their anger to someone. So they directed it toward the two people in authority that they could speak to. The king, he is the problem for this evil in the world. And, which often happens, God. If there was a real God who ruled and who is present amongst us, there wouldn't be these problems in the world. It must be God's fault. And then, as this despair takes hold of them, we see in verse 22 that their eyes see only distress. They don't see anything good in the world. They only see distress and darkness. Please join. Welcome. There's lots of seats. They only see distress and darkness. And look at this phrase, and fearful gloom. So their eyes just see darkness. But then they take a step even further, and they are thrust into utter darkness. Not only do they see darkness, but their entire world becomes utterly dark. Such was the present darkness at Ahaz's time, which then Matthew declares is the darkness for which the light of Jesus came. That level of darkness is something which some of you have experienced. This level of darkness is the kind of darkness people close to you have experienced. Nations can experience this level of darkness. Families can experience this. Marriages can experience this. Workplaces can experience this. This level of darkness is so thick that it's referred to as utter darkness. But here's the point that Isaiah is saying, that Matthew says, it's into that level of utter darkness that the light of Jesus has dawned. Right? It's not, oh, wow, it's awful. I'm so thankful for Jesus. It's that Jesus came to shine in that darkness, including when it's in you. Including when you reach the point in your life where the only thing you see is distress and darkness and fearful gloom. When you want to curse God, His light came into that real darkness. And then as we are changed by His light, He sends us into that darkness. He does not say, as I transform you, as you see my holiness, as you see your sin, as you're cleansed from your sin, as you grow in hope, keep yourself from that big bad world. He then sends us into it. Not people standing on our own, but people who continue to need His light, that we might shine with Him in that darkness. All right, enough on the darkness. Let's look at what Isaiah then says, beginning with verse 1, about this light of Jesus that's dawning, of which we alluded to earlier in the service. There will be no more gloom, he writes, for those who were in distress. Wow, what a promise. In the past, he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, speaking about this time and other times. But in the future, he will honor Galilee of nations by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan. That's where Jesus began his ministry and where he was born in that region. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. Speaking of Jesus, on those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. And then it goes on to say some words about that light. But first of all, let me say something about where this light will shine, where this rule of Jesus will be displayed. As I alluded to, it will be displayed in the same place where the gloom was experienced. It's not that the light of Jesus removes you. Oh, I once experienced such despair over these things, but now Jesus has removed those things from my life. Oh, no, no, no. You experience this gloom and despair in these particular places, and His light shines in those same places. He doesn't lead you to run away from those places of pain, but His light so shines in those places of pain that you see His holiness, you see His presence, you see your sin, you see His cleansing, you see the covering of shame. His light shines in those same places. Notice as well that those places also can be ones where God has humbled you. Some of the distress, some of the fearful gloom, some of even our anger against God is because we've been humbled by Him. That because of things in our life, God has humbled us, resulting in a lot of pain and a lot of darkness, including broken relationships. But His light shines in those places where we've been humbled. It's not that we say, yeah, I was once humbled and I'm so glad I don't have anything to do with him or her anymore. No, no, no. As He humbles us, He shines His light in those places where we've been humbled. And He shines His light so we see His presence in that darkness. And then He says at the end of that section, on those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. The people walking in darkness. So this isn't just a limited space, but it's a wide space where we walk. And the idea there is it's not just a private affair. That as we walk through our lives, as we walk into the city, as we walk into the places where we work, as we walk into the places where we go to school, sometimes we sense this darkness and His light is shining in those places where there was deep darkness. Continue then in verses 3 through 5. As we look at this dawning light, we've seen where that light's going to shine. Now look at some of the things that happen when that light shines. Look at some of what happens in verses 3 through 5. The prophet says, you've enlarged the nation and increased their joy. And this picture isn't just the boundaries of a nation expanding, but the peoples that see that light are expanding. This, you've enlarged those who see the rule of Jesus, is what this is anticipating. And increase their joy. People who were living in darkness start to experience a joy that did not come from them, but came from this light dawning amongst them and in them. They rejoiced before you. Remember that at the time of Ahaz, he had closed the temple. Here we see they will rejoice before you as people rejoice at harvest. They will rejoice before God. Instead of cursing God, they will rejoice in Him. Like at the time when there's been a great harvest, or as warriors rejoice when dividing the plunder at the end of a war when people have succeeded. And then he mentions in verse 4, for as in the day of Midian's defeat, which was a time previously in the time of Judges, where Gideon was a judge, for those of you that know that history, you have shattered the oak that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of the oppressor. So what are they celebrating and rejoicing in the presence of God? That He has broken oppression. He has broken through that which is like this heavy yoke that just burdens people. The oppression that comes with that darkness. Wow, and that could be many things in your life. It's many things in our world. But the light of Jesus shatters that yoke, the rod of the oppressor. And then he describes in verse 5 further what it will be like. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire. There will be no more war. The rule of Jesus shining as a light in darkness will lead there to be a peace that will last, where there will be no more war. Then look with me further at verses 6 and 7, where we see some specific ways in which Jesus, God with us, the light shining in the darkness, presently rules. And the rule that is described here is a rule that Jesus displayed during His earthly ministry, a rule that He talked about when the new heavens and the new earth will be brought in with His second coming, and a rule that exists now as He shines His light in the darkness and shines His light in us and sends us into that darkness. The rule, as He, and I don't have time to go into all of it, He will be called wonderful. To us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on His shoulders, speaking of His rule, and He will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace. let me say something about that as it relates to how that light both shines and how that light can be recognized, including when it shines in your life. The first, this idea of the wonderful counselor, it's used in another place of Isaiah to refer to the marvelous plans of God. So some of you think of the word counselor as meeting one-on-one with someone that helps you with your problems, which is okay. But the idea here is of this wonderful plan of God revealed in Jesus that leads people to marvel. Okay, when we think of that light shining, that light of Jesus shining in the darkness as a wonderful counselor, what do we see of that light? And what does God long that the world will see of light? Number one, that God has a purpose for the world that's wonderful. The evil is so dark and it is so thick, but God has a purpose for the world that is wonderful, that's revealed in Jesus. Think of his ministry on earth, for those of you that know the stories from the early parts of the New Testament. What was people's response to what Jesus revealed amongst the people? This is wonderful. This is marvelous. This is beautiful. We have never seen such things. That's the way the light shines in the darkness, that people will say, the purposes of God revealed in Jesus are wonderful. But now remember, so we don't disconnect, that same light shines in you, so you experience the light of Jesus as a wonderful counselor. So in your life, you start to experience, the purposes of God revealed in Jesus are wonderful. And I'm experiencing them. I'm beginning to move out of this gloom, out of this fear, out of this dark despair. Oh Lord, your purposes are wonderful. And his light shines in us. And then as that light shines in us, we enter into these places of darkness and people start to say to us, how come your life is so different? And here's your danger. Well, yeah, I don't know. Or you start to think, I really am a pretty neat person. I give really good counsel here. It's really neat that the people are starting to call me a wonderful counselor. Oops. It's the light of Jesus whose plans are wonderful, whose purposes are marvelous, shining in us and in the world, and then leading us into that dark world. So when someone says to you, why do you have a sense of calm in the midst of this storm? You don't say, well, it's Jesus. No. Well, actually, there are many times I can be like you. And there are many times I still am. But you know, I have found that in Jesus and his light shining in me, I sometimes find myself facing situations where I have confidence in his purposes. And that as bad as this seems, there's hope in him. That his purposes, even in this situation, are marvelous and wonderful. And the person then says, yeah, but I've made a mess of my life. And we don't say, yeah, you really have. You say, yeah, I've made a mess of my life. Which is one of the beautiful things about Jesus, is that he shines his life in these places where we've made a complete mess of things, in these places where we've been humbled. Not to then abandon us, but that through his light, we come to see our own sin, and that we talk to him about it. And that part of why then Jesus came and his light shines is so that through his death on the cross and resurrection, he might take away our sin. You really think he could do that for me? See? This light of Jesus as the wonderful counselor shining in us and shining in the world. Then it goes on to talk about Mighty God. That the light of Jesus shines, the power of God, and the person of God. Jesus is not a human ambassador of the one God. Jesus is God, and what he shines is powerful. So into that darkness, what he shines is not powerlessness, is not helplessness. What he shines is God. What he shines is mighty. So that when we start to feel God is powerless here, where is the light of Jesus shining in you? Is there no light of the dawn shining in you? The light of the dawn shines in you so that when you see these dark places where you feel helpless and powerless and you fear that God is absent, that light in you shows you that he is present and that he is powerful. And then we read, Everlasting Father. And it doesn't mean that Jesus was the same as the first person of the Trinity. But the understanding there is often rulers saw themselves as king and as subjects, but sometimes they used the language of father and children. That a good king would treat his children as his own children, as his own family. And the image here is that the light of Jesus and the rule of Jesus will shine in such a way that people will know his grace, that they will know his love, that they will know his forgiveness, that they will know his compassion. So as the light of Jesus shines in you, and as you begin to experience that, and you begin to admit, Lord Jesus, I'm so thankful that you're not ashamed to call me your brother or your sister because of your work in my life, not because of anything in myself. And then as we go into the dark world, we don't judge. You evil people, you awful people, you... No. The light of Jesus in us shines with a father heart of God. So we enter into the brokenness of people's lives, even those who've made a mess of it themselves, with the compassion of Jesus. And then finally, which is all I have time for, we read the words, Prince of Peace. That his peace, which is more than the absence of hostility or the decrease of war, it is a peace that at its core is enjoyment in relationships with God, with one another. It is this peace, which Lily read earlier from Isaiah 7, where the wolf will live with a lamb. Now, how many times do you see a wolf living with a lamb? Where people that were hostile live in enjoyment with one another. Where they lie down together and have tea. Where they share life in Christ together and say, wow, my people group hated your people group. My clan hated your clan. I hated you. I'm so thankful that in Jesus we can experience enjoyment again. That is the peace that Jesus brought between us and God. That is the peace of his light shining in us. So that as we experience that peace with God, with whom we were once enemies, but through his cross are made not just friends, but brothers and sisters of Jesus. That light shining in us allows us to go into the world as peacemakers. Shining his light. Isn't it wonderful? Isn't it marvelous? That such be the darkness that is present, but such is his light that shines in the darkness.